Hello everybody, I'm George Milo. Thank you for coming back to my channel. Talking about the Russian Shadow Fleet. That is to say, ships transporting Russian oil, liquid natural gas, occasionally other goods such as grain, abroad. And these are ships which are flagged under flags of convenience. That's not that unusual. Many countries, many companies have done it for centuries. Sometimes not, you know, not to do with situations like this war. With invalid insurance, inadequate insurance, no insurance, sometimes trying to disguise what the cargo is, its origin, its destination, so forth, who's buying it, hide the ownership through shell companies, all the rest of it. And that's obviously because since the beginning of the Ukraine war, 2022, Ukraine's allies, most European countries, Japan, South Korea, Australia, Canada, Singapore, the USA, they've sanctioned Russian oil and gas, limiting how much of it they will buy, whether it can be transported by ship or by pipeline and stuff like that, the price cap, various ways to try and reduce the money going to Russia's war coffers. Now, they didn't go cold turkey because, you know, the European Union got something like 50% of its liquid natural gas in Russia. To stop buying it completely would mean switching off the heating and indeed much of the electricity in midwinter. But, you know, these customers for Russian oil and gas have weaned themselves off of buying less and less, maybe phasing it out completely. That probably wouldn't be for several years time. So and also not to provide insurance to tankers transporting Russian oil or liquid natural gas, to make it difficult or impossible to sell, to make it more expensive to sell, so the profit margin is less, and every kopeck fewer for Russia means fewer bullets being fired at the Ukrainians and so on. To purchase Russian goods is obviously to undo the work that these countries do in arming and funding Ukraine. So it still has a major shadow fleet, depending on how broad one's definition, anything from 700 vessels up to about 1,500. So the Ministry of Defense of the United Kingdom estimate that about 3/4 of Russia's oil is transported by such ships. Obviously, they've got pipelines like Yamal and what is it? There's the other one going to China. Druzhba was going through like Ukraine, Slovakia to Hungary. Well, that's been switched off. I can't remember the other one, the Sibir, whatever it was, the Siberian one to China. You can build more pipelines, but that would take at least several years and so on. Okay, and Nord Stream 2 never happened. The one that's going to go through the North Sea into Germany and all the rest of it. Power of Siberia, that's it, the one that was going to go, that goes to China. All right, they can route it via other countries, via Kazakhstan, so they can mix other oil or pass off somebody else's product, a classic way to evade sanctions. Like in Rhodesia in the 70s, they pretended their tobacco was produced somewhere else, sent out by a train to South Africa. As soon as a train crossed the border, all records were burnt, so there could never be any proof that it was sanctions busting, because the purchasers didn't want people to know they were doing this. Okay, so yeah, the European Union has sanctioned 670 vessels. They're always behind. It's very difficult to keep up. This is a game of whack-a-mole, because some ships are hired or bought, sold, scrapped, whatever. Ownership has changed. The flagging has changed to try and keep it, you know, one step ahead. And, you know, there could be a captain who is a Cypriot, a cruise, a Filipino, Bangladeshi. It could be registered in Liberia, and it was manufactured in China, and it's going from Russia to wherever, to Sri Lanka or something like that. Sometimes their ships out at sea transfer oil at sea, switching off their transponder so they can't be easily located, now, which is very risky, because then other ships can't see them and there could be a collision. Obviously, they're in the dead of night. I mean, visual is not very important, because often it's at night. They could, might not have all their lights on. The other thing is, these things are very difficult to slow and stop. So if you press the brake, it doesn't stop immediately. Think of super tankers, is going to go on for a long while. And you're obviously moved by the currents, the waves. And so it goes on. So, the United Kingdom claimed earlier this year that over 200 oil tankers had stopped trading. I mean, partly ship owners or whatever, or those who are going to purchase, say it's more hassle than it's worth, is a risk, sometimes a prosecution. So it's becoming trickier for Russia, but there's really no sign it's stopping. I mean, to stop it completely would take an enormous endeavor, a few more years. I think it's not a realistic goal to prevent it altogether. Like most problems, it's reducible. It's not completely soluble. Russia has its own shipbuilding industry, but like many other things, it's suffered. More difficult to get components from abroad. They got a contracting workforce. The cost of everything is going up, including labor. Right. And, you know, they're affected by drone strikes. Not that the civilian shipbuilding is particularly a drone target, but, you know, there are also problems. People even getting to work with fuel shortages. So it's more costly for Russia to make this function. Therefore, they just get less profit out of the oil. It's harder to fund this effort to subjugate and oppress Ukraine. Is now sending warships to escort these, thinking it will be a deterrent to countries which want to board these shadow fleet. Ships may have legal grounds for them to be impounded. Okay, so they use Cameroonian flags. Some of them, they use the Russian flags quite a lot, Panamanian flags. You know, some countries flags are convenient to use loads. If they've got very lax regulation and inspection, it makes it cheaper to operate. So the ship could have little or no connection, but it has to be registered to a country. And there was one Russian shadow fleet ship passing through the territorial waters of the United Kingdom, and it was stateless, which is illegal, was seized. You know, the League of Nations way back in the 1920s worked out the international law of the sea, because it's very, very complicated when, you know, there was a ship that was registered in Japan, sailing to Australia through Indonesian territorial waters with a crew that was mostly Argentine and owned by a Swiss guy, and whose law applies. And the other thing about incidents is an incident stopping some might happen in international waters, carry on to your in the territorial waters of the Philippines. And then by the time it finishes in the territorial waters of Vietnam or something like that, often it's disputed when an incident started and when it stopped and exactly where you were at the time. So the international law of the sea is to sort all that out. Likewise, sort of aviation law, about the applicability of law. All right. So, about 60% of their tankers are either Panamanian, Russian, or Cameroonian registered. One of the ways to crack down on this is you could persuade, cajole, or indeed pressurize Panama and Cameroon to stop doing this, incentivize them, offer them more money they're making out of this. They've used Djiboutian flags, Palau flags, which are very popular as well, Seychellois, Barbadian, Gambian, Liberian, Gabonese, and Comoros. Often these are the global majority, the global south, who are not unsympathetic to Russia in many cases. But the flag is often very misleading, okay? So the owner is often based in the United Arab Emirates. He or she may be Emirati or Chinese. There are lots of shell companies to hide the true ownership, a company that owns a company and things like that. So the insurer is almost always from a non-Western country. Most Western countries refuse to insure them. And, you know, where sanctioning countries control something like 90% of the insurance market. People thought this is the Achilles heel of Russia's oil tankers. Actually, it's not been as effectual as some were hoping. And it's usually purchased by China and or India. I mean, companies usually rather than the government. So, so that was the weak point meant to be insurance. Otherwise, there's the International Group of P&I Clubs. And this is the organization that provides indemnity insurance in the case the ship is wrecked. There are collisions, there's pollution and oil leaks, stuff like that. It could be an environmental catastrophe. So the Shadow Fleet is trying to find alternatives to Western insurers. And so these countries, these ships have no insurance or improper insurance, or maybe they have insurance, but it's not clear, and it should be. So in 2024, over 700 vessels, suspecting part of the Shadow Fleet, passed through the English Channel alone to find out whether they valid insurance. Many of them did, some of them actually weren't Shadow Fleet, they need to stay suspected. Ships can be disguised, names can be changed and things like that. Parts of them can be rearranged. So they're Russian insurance, Alfa Strakhovanie, which is Strakhovanie just means insurance, Sogaz and Balance Insurance. So I was somewhat involved with, Reso Garantia, a Russian insurance company. So far as I know, they're not involved. The Shadow Fleet uses, as I say, non-Western insurers. Some is very difficult to determine the ownership. The vessels are often older, they're cheaper, but they're more liable to break down or even sink. So far, it hasn't happened. Sometimes they don't have any proof of insurance. The flags can be changed. Sometimes the flags might be flown even without permission. What's that government going to do? So, because if this tanker sinks or there's some terrible leak, that could be 100,000 tons of oil. That could kill a lot of birds, a lot of other marine life, wash up on shore and so on. Can go on fire, could explode, could be a danger to other vessels, to nearby ports. You know, think of the Exxon Valdez in Alaska, where back was it 1988. So they sail from Russia, often out through the Gulf of Finland, the Baltic Sea, through the Skagerrak and the Kattegat, into the North Sea and then wherever, all through the Bosporus into the Mediterranean, through the Suez Canal, the Strait of Gibraltar, and so forth. When they're sailing from the Russian Arctic Ocean, there's really nothing can be done. There are no choke points there or from the Russian Far East. So Bazoom mostly to India and China. So 35% of the crude oil on these ships is bound for China, 32% for India. I'm not sure about the refined oil. Okay, so Russia particularly sells crude oil to India. India does a lot of the refining itself, China a bit less, particularly from Primorsk and Ust-Luga. And I suppose the thing would be, well, why not, rather than whack a mole, whack the, I don't know, the mole's hole? And if the Ukrainians hit those ports very hard, because there's certain facilities for, how would you put it, loading the oil, and destroy that. And obviously they're limited number of oil workers at these ports. They're often quite skilled specialities. Now, I don't advocate that. That's a possibility. That would be killing civilians. Okay, I know people get killed. Civilians not to be targeted. Wrecking the enemy's economy. That's long recognized as a lawful tactic. But unavoidably, some civilians would be killed in doing that. So it's for the Ukrainians to consider the morality and indeed the legality of that. So the thing is to block these choke points that are controlled by NATO countries, the Danish Straits and the Baltic Sea, the English Channel and the Mediterranean, the Straits of Gibraltar and so forth. Okay, but is that lawful? Because international law of the sea, innocent passage is allowed. So explain why they changed their tracking and so forth. So some have been seized and really, and nothing's been done about it. So that's why, you know, Ukraine's allies are going to be much braver about this. 9 suspected shadow fleets have been impounded and they've been kept. So Russia's, France has seized 5 of them and nothing's been done. In June this year, the Smirtos was seized by the United Kingdom. Now, France and the UK are quite cautious, only doing so when they're very confident that they have legal grounds to do so. So only a small number has been seized, but that has been a discouragement to others. Other, ship owners, insurers who would have got involved haven't because of the costs involved, the risks to them, the reputational risks. Okay, so 14th of June, the Royal Marines boarded the Smirtos, a gallant decision by Starm. I suppose he knew it was going out quite soon. It was sailing as a Cameroonian ship, but really that was a lie. It was stateless. There's the UNCLOS, which is the United Nations Law of the Sea, Article 110, that a warship has the right to board the vessel where it has good reason to suspect it doesn't have a proper nationality, flying the Cameroonian flag without permission. So that's it. Okay, so now, just a few days ago, Putin said if any country seizes his ships, that they will hit back in the same way. A Russian admiral in the Pacific, Viktor Ilina, even said that the Russian Navy is going to so-called inspect vessels from unfriendly nations. But why is Putin even saying this? Well, we can tell 2 things. First, he thinks there's a serious possibility it might happen, more of his ships be seized. And second one, is he thinks that this would do him serious harm. He's not threatening people about a ground invasion of Russia because nobody's talking about that one, or say it recognizes the independence of Chechnya because, again, nobody's even proposing that one, and that wouldn't actually change anything. Can't even stop the dinghies from France. Well, the thing is, I suppose we could do, but so tied up in like red tape and say, well, what about the European Convention of Human Rights? Don't tow them back. Would the French accept them back? Is the thing there that they wouldn't. Well, I think you hit the nail on the head about a lack of backbone, of just determination, of willing to just go ahead and do it and not hand-wringing, pearl-clutching, overthinking things. Okay, so whatever you're going to do, do it boldly. So shouldn't have seized 9 vessels, should have seized dozens, hundreds. And then if it wouldn't stop entirely, it would be drastically reduced. And what's he going to do? You know, so much of his navy is stuck in the Black Sea. They can't get out. Evreux Convention. Turkey's not going to allow belligerent ships in or out during wartime. And that's it. A lot of his fleet is stuck in the in the Baltic Sea. They can't get out. That's a NATO lake. He's got the specific one. He's got the North Sea. But they could then, if they come into the Mediterranean or something like that, they might even be within range of the Ukrainians because they're increasing long drone capability. And he doesn't want to lose too much of his navy because what if there's a final showdown with NATO and he lost those? Putin dearly loves the navy. Why? It's actually not that important. You're a land-based country. It's because his father was in it. Even just briefly. So what Russia could do, could shadow merchant ships is not that much of a problem, could stop them, demand to inspect them, or whatever could interfere with their radio communications, could possibly vandalize them, ram them, go very close to them, things like that. And that might be an incident, that might be a clash. No matter how guilty they are, they will always victim blame. So boarding ships, I think that is less likely. They wouldn't do it very often because that might really trigger a big response from all NATO countries and even non-NATO countries. So they won't escalate. There's a lot of bluffing by him, you know, because with all these blood-curdling threats, if you give these weapons, well, remember, we've got nuclear weapons. Yeah, if you seize a single one of my ships, they'll be held to pay. And he's done nothing about it. It's like Turkey. Erdogan, evil bastard though he is, there is some good to him. When, you know, there were daggers drawn to Russia, when a Russian warplane violated their airspace for seconds, it was shot down. The pilot was killed. Then the weapon system officer bailed out, was eventually found by the Russians. But after that, Russia stopped violating their airspace because they paid a price for it. Right. Thanks for watching my channel. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon. Don't forget PayPal, georgecallan79@gmail.com. Goodbye.